Okay, today is February 16th. This course is Theodicy in the Bible, and we are up to Shmos Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud Zayin. God is speaking in the middle of a conversation with Moshe, and Moshe had just asked that God himself accompany them in the desert. God said, My own personal hashkacha pratit for you requires a certain behavior on your part. And I'm telling you, it would be more harmful for you if that hashkacha pratit is upon you. And Moshe says, I'm not accepting it. I want panai lechu. I want, Hashem says, just my face will look at you from far, but I'm going to send an angel to go with you. Right? Now, Moshe had already heard that actually in Parshat Mishpatim, that God says, I will send an angel to walk before you. Right? That is pre-Egel, and Moshe may have interpreted that as an angel in addition to me. Right? There's a lot of different ways to take this, what that angel represents. Ibn Ezra just says the simple. An angel is Elohim. God's full presence is Yud Kei Vav Kei. Right? I understand you have different Hitgaluyot, depending on what your name is. I don't want the generic Elohim to follow us. I want Yud Kei Vav Kei following us. Alright? Hashem says, according to this, Yud Kei Vav Kei is yes. It's going to be a much closer hashkacha, but you have to be careful. When my hashkacha is closer to you, you have to be more careful about what you end up doing. Right? This is a cryptic, but this is what Ibn Ezra says in his parish. It appears in many places in his parish of the Torah. The very first pasuk, Roi Bereshit Bara Elokim, it appears when Moshe asks God, "What is your name? What should I tell Bnei Israel?" And it appears here. Okay. Of course, it appears also in the beginning of Va'ira. Right? Okay. So on all these psukim, this is what it says. So it's all a question of hashkacha pratit. What is God's hashkacha over us as a nation and over us as individuals? So this is an important point to make at the outset, and then we'll go into the psukim. The hashkacha over individuals is going to be different. Hashkacha pratit for you is going to be different than another person for obvious reasons. Only you have your particular struggles. Right? So only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what the Rambam calls Kel Deot, the all-knowing, the omniscient God, knows exactly what his hashkacha has to be vis-a-vis you with your personal struggles. So no two people have the same hashkacha. Understood? This is trying to explain the apparent randomness that the world seems to be running with. Right? The world is such a game of inches. How life can be so different for just one inch of a difference. And you can look over your life and some of these things are a whole ace era of a book, if it's all right, we don't even know the things that didn't happen. Right? Mm-hmm. Okay? And one time, this became more famous this past year because some piece of cement fell from a top of a building on 74th Street and it actually hit a kid, killed him. Right? This happened about 20 years ago on 99th Street. And that person I actually knew, two girls walking, and it hit one of them. I knew the surviving girl, I know her name, I know who she is, and it killed the other girl. So, you know, you ask, you know, it's the same kind of questions a lot of sole survivors from families in the Holocaust have asked. You know, what have I done to survive here? Right, is God with me more than with them? Right? What is my hashkacha? You know, well, we have to be very careful saying, from my third-party standpoint, that God was with all those people who were in the World Trade Center who managed to make it out safely. Is there a reason why he wasn't with the other close to 3,000, right? Be careful from the outside. I have no philosophical grounding to say one way or the other, but I will understand the person himself who made it out, who feels God was with me as I was going down the steps. And he said everybody was telling them, stay up in your offices. If something happened to the other building, we're going to be fine. And he said, no, something's wrong here. I'm getting out of here. Right? That was the first thing when they were telling people to stay. Then afterwards, and some people did not make it down. Right? Okay, so here, they just establish, and you all agree, if you have something to say about this, that the hashkacha for each individual is going to be different because each individual has a different struggle, and tries to explain the randomness. So one time I'm walking with, I just had two kids at the time. One was in a stroller and one was walking, holding one of our hands. So there were four of us. Our second daughter in a stroller. Our older daughter, who was at the time about two and a half. My wife and I were walking on West End Avenue and 78th Street. And a something metal, we didn't stick around to see what this was, came crashing down and just fell just in the middle of us. It fell so hard that it smashed the concrete floor. Look outside and see it. Smashed it into pieces. And we turned away unscathed. How drastically different is life for us today if that's just a wind, just, or a, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Or if I didn't swat at a fly 3 seconds before, in which case I would have been 2 inches further over. Right? So what you don't want to just get a sense is that, is life so random? Could so much of my life and the people I've touched be dependent on just that? Right? So here is now our discussion of that hashgacha. So Moshe says, God, I don't want Elohim, I don't want an angel. I want you. Whatever that costs, Moshe, are you sure you're bargaining collectively for everybody? Are you sure of this? You sure you want Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei in your midst? Because that's already a bigger burden on you. Right? Moshe says, I'll take it upon myself. That's what I want. All right? So let's go. Emor Hashem al Moshe. You with me? We're reading Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud Zayin. If you don't have the Tanakh in your computer, just stick it on here. Yeah? Okay. So it says, Gam et hadavar hazeh asher dibarta eseh ki matzoto chen be'inai vo'ei do'acha b'shem. Moshe, you bargained well. I will give you this thing. You have found favor in my eyes, and I have even shown you my name, something that B'nai Yisrael have only come to know because of you. Right? Because of you, I have a new name in the world. Right? I've chosen you for that. And you've done a good job of it. By this time, we're all free from Egypt, and we have received a divine visit to the very public divine message of his revelation, right? And now something drastic has happened in between, right? And Moshe's, the way that Chazal framed this discussion is that, God, the way I know you, I just don't understand why you gave them the means to make this Egel. And now you want to destroy them for it? You harden Pharaoh's heart and then you punish him for it. You sow the seeds of jealousy in the heart of Cain, and then you just watch idly by as he kills his brother. I want to see your face. I want to know how things go. Right? Okay. Then you can add the Chazal, who fashioned this discussion in this way. Chazal say that even back in Egypt, when Hashem told Moshe to get all this gold and silver, right, it was to fulfill just Yashrus, after all, right? when you leave jail, you know, if you don't give someone enough resources to pick up the pieces afterwards, you know, how can I get started? So I want you to leave this place, just like it says in the Torah, when a slave leaves his slavery, the Torah says, Lo yishalchu reikam. Right? The Gemara is the Torah Shebaal Peh, in Kiddushin, tells you all the gifts that you have to give this guy upon leaving. So too, when you leave slavery, I want you to leave the same way. Right? You got it? There's a beautiful perush of... it's a student of Moses Mendelssohn. His name is Beno Yaakov. You ever hear of the name? Beno Yaakov. Nechama Leibowitz cites him pretty often. He says, V'nitzaltem es Mitzrayim, which is usually translated as, you shall despoil Egypt by taking all that gold and silver, right? He says it means you shall save Egypt. Right? You shall save Egypt. Now, because by giving over their gold and silver and their clothing, it meant that I fostered some goodwill between these slaves and their former masters. You know, there's a law about how we should behave with respect to Egyptians in the Torah. Are you familiar with it? Lo titaev mitzri higer ha'ita be'aitzo. Do not despise the Egyptian. You are a stranger in his land. Right? He took you away. I mistreated you? No doubt. Because it's very interesting. Avraham Soloveitchik talks about in his book on... it's a long name. Understanding the body, understanding the soul, something like that. And he says he compares our early independence with other independence movements, notably not like this country, but the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution. What usually happens after a revolution, what Castro did in Cuba, what usually happens after a revolution, what you see going on in much of the Arab world today, in Libya, in Iraq, right? What happens when a despotic rule, and one can certainly refer to power that way with respect to us, right? When the despotic rule ends, what does the new party usually end up doing? They end up being despotic themselves, right? Think of what happened after the French Revolution. Here's what the Bolsheviks did. Think of the new people in power who utterly wipe out everyone who used to be in power, right? Now, to be sure, we didn't have to do this because it was basically done for us. Hashem said, I don't want you going out of your houses to watch the vengeance of the firstborn. Stay in now, don't gloat over what's happening to them. So that's disingenuous on my part. You know, they didn't have to take revenge. Revenge was taken for them, right? But okay, that is part of the idea, is that it was out of their system. The Jews did not leave Egypt looking back saying, I'm gonna come back here. No, we just wanted to get to Israel. Right? Okay? We don't want to join your enemies and kick you out of the land like your original Paro lied about us. You know what I'm talking about, right? In the beginning of Shmos. Einam b'nei Yisrael, rabba tumi menu, havin yitzchak malo. That was a lie. And as soon as the Egyptians realized that during the plague of Choshech, right, because they realized that they could see, they could have killed every one of us. And they didn't. So that's when it says, Ve'itein Hashem ischeinu am b'nei Yisrael. The Egyptians started to be enamored by us and feel bad about what they had done to us all those years. Will that was fostered, right, is what saved the Egyptians, so to say. In other words, it was important for us to leave with goodwill. So Moshe says, all right, God, I get all this. But you knew what they were going to do with that gold and silver. You knew they were going to use it for bad purpose, right? You ever hear Derech Tachos? You ever hear there is a Gemara that says that Hashem told Moshe, the reason why you must leave with gold and silver is because I promised that to Avraham. Remember the words? Acherechem yetzu birchush gadol. in a Greek ben haptarim.
Yes, yeah, so why did he pronounce
it? Okay, so sharpen the question. Marsha asks that question in a different direction. He says, if Hashem told Moshe, you're right, they don't really need the gold and silver, but I promised it to Abraham. Okay, so Moshe says, okay, but that's still, why did you promise it to Abraham? Hashem says, I didn't promise gold and silver to Abraham. What is Rechush Gadol? Ibn Ezra even says it, since Perish al Torah. What is the Rechush Gadol I promised Avram they'd leave Egypt with? The Torah. A deed to a land. I promised them I'm going to take them to a land of Israel. That's the Rechush. I didn't give you money.
So then why did he give
you gold? It's a beautiful point of how to read Torah. Why do I have to get them gold and silver? And besides, this is the question that Marsha asks, and the Mefarshim to Rashi brings it down in his parish on the words Daber Nosh of his Ne'am. Sound familiar? Why does Hashem have to say, please Moshe, get gold and silver? And the Gemara says, Bavakasha Mimcha. Because if you don't get gold and silver, Oso Tzadik, Avram Avinu is going to be very upset with me. You say, he'll say, you kept your promise making my descendants slaves. But Vacharechein Yetzir B'chush Gadol Lo Ki Yehbohem. Right? So Hashem could say, I know, I can answer, I don't need talking about that. Giving him the land of Israel, Avram, you should be satisfied with that. This is what I'm doing with this. This is not the Marsha. The answer is that the reason why they had to go out with gold and silver is because that's what Avram thought Hashem meant. Yeah?
Yeah.
Beautiful Tanakh point. That what does the Torah mean? The Torah means what someone, what is a person with Yiras Shamayim, like Avram, you know, not just Stam, a Bible critic, but someone with Yiras Shamayim who reads Torah. That's the intention of the pasuk. Hashem says, you know, Rechush Gadol can mean a lot of things, but since Avram thought I meant money, it's got to be money. So that's why I have to keep my promise, not because I made a promise. Of course, I'm going to keep my promise. I'm God. I keep all my promises, right? I'm not telling you to do this because Avram is going to be upset if I don't. I'm telling you to do this because you know, I'll be keeping my promise even if you didn't get gold and silver. It's not what I meant. Right? Fact is, when most people hear the word rechush, they're thinking money.
What does rechush really mean?
Property, inheritance. Right? Okay. Can I just end this discussion with another Derech Tzachos when Moshe says, God, if you don't forgive them, here he says, Mecheni no misifrcha. See the cute thing here? If you don't forgive them, take out the word no from that original command, and I wouldn't have gotten it. It's only because you said no. That's what the Gemara says. Take out the word no from your book, and we wouldn't have had this problem. Right? Okay, I'm just putting it out there. All right. So, but Moshe is still bothered by this. How can you think of punishing them when you put this temptation right in front of them? If you hear the Gemara in Daf Lamed Gimel and Bracha says, if a king puts a money bag around his son's neck and douses him with perfume and makes him walk right in front of a whorehouse, you don't think he's going to sin? That's the Gemara's likens it. You put sin right in front of them. I don't understand you, God. You give Adam and Chava the trees. What is this? What is this human condition you're putting here? Right? Do we have free will? Do we not? Why all these temptations? Why did you have to tempt them with the gold and silver? You knew what they were going to do with it. So that's why you need to back off. Let's read this. Vayomar, God's response to Moshe's response to God saying, I have made my name known to the world. Ibn Ezra explains, really very, it works very beautifully. God, before I came on the scene, you were Elohim to everybody. Right? When Paro heard that you're Yudke Vovke, he said, Paro believed in powerful deities. Right? But I don't know this Yudke Vovke deity. Right? Moshe came to teach the world what Yudke Vovke is. The keeper of promises, working with beyond nature. Okay? So, and especially mercy and morality. But Hashem says, since Moshe, since you made me known to the world with this new name, I'll give you what you want. So Moshe says, Hareni na es kivodecha. Small pasuk. Hareni na es kivodecha. So here's the obvious question. What does Moshe want with this request? What is Moshe's request? Show me your kavod. So we can't fully understand unless we see what God's response is. Hashem says, "Vayomer ani aavir kol tuvi al panecha. I will pass over all my goodness upon your face." In other words, I am. If you want to know what I am ultimate good. That's why I created man. Right? Can we describe God with any adjective? That's just to break our ear. You ever hear that terminology? Lishpor et ha'ozen. Right? Is God happy with Noach? Noach motzachein b'nei Hashem, and he was not happy with everyone else. What God was saying? Oh, I get nachas from Noach, but the rest of the world, feh. It's just for human being to to use for our limited minds to explain in languages we understand. We did that. Remember, we looked up a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, ha'otihem machisim. You think you make God angry? And Radak writes, Lo tachul bi midat ka'as, velo mida acheret. There's no way to describe me except good. Ani avir kol tuvi. And in order to be the ultimate good, am I deciding this for God? No, this is based on this pasuk and many others, that in order to be the ultimate good, you have to be a giver. Right? So that God had to. I'm telling what God had to do. Yes, this philosophy says that in order to be a giver, you have to create receivers. And better yet, teach them that they are in your image. And teach them that in order to fulfill your mission of being in his image, I'll finish my sentence, you also have to be givers. Now, there are some beings in this world, some animals, that are also by instinct very giving, right? Especially a mother to its young, right? Hashem expects a lot more from us. I expect you to be a giver even when it goes against your instinct. Right? We all have a survival instinct, right? The smallest cockroach has a survival instinct. Right? Look at an ant. Put your finger on an ant, it's going to run away if you try to survive, right? We all have a survival instinct. I want to teach you to be a giver, even if it goes against that instinct and many other instincts of yours. Right? We get hungry. Right? My instinct is we have certain desires. Right? When a young couple asks me a shaila that may have to separate them for some time, you think their instinct is not to be together, but they're strong enough to ask a shaila. Right? This father had a chance to get his son off of a shipment where the Nazis said that we need 400 boys, and we know where they're going. Right? So his son was included, and he had a way to get him off. He had knew someone, one of the commandants, the private or something. So he asked Frank Usher, am I allowed to do that? Right? He refused to answer. He said, I can't tell you not to, but I also can't tell you that you can. Because if you take your son out, what do you think they're going to do? Place him to someone else. So your bribe is going to kill someone else who was meant to live today. He may die tomorrow, and your son may die tomorrow, but he didn't take him off. It's a story that appears in the Sefer, the Mamakim, Shalos Tshuvos, the camps. And it was the second day of Rosh Hashanah that he didn't take his son off. And he said, second day of Rosh Hashanah, we read about the Akedah, and I did what Avraham did.
Lived himself the rest of his life, and he felt he could have saved his son's life, but chose not to.
Right? What man's instinct is not to save your son? Right? But I can't save my son if it means someone else's son is going to die as a result. Right. What if you read between the lines of what I'm saying, is that it may go against who am I to talk about this little worm here, to talk about God's instinct. God's instinct may be not to create us. You're familiar with the Midrashim about all the mitos that came up to tell God, don't create man? Have you heard of it? MS says, don't create man. Man is a big liar. Right? All the mitos. There are different forms of this Midrash. Rachamim says, don't create man, he's cruel. And each one says, don't create man because he's this, this, and this. Right? So I think that Medrash means to say the same, is that maybe God's instinct is that we shouldn't be created. Because we're so imperfect with this thing called free will. Right? You could just program us to do everything right. Right? And instead, he creates us and reveals a command, 7 mitzvahs to the whole world and 613 to just some of them, in order to teach something greater. Right? Let's read on, please. And he says, "V'karasi b'shem Hashem lefanecha." I will continue to be understood as not just Elohim to you, but Yud Kei Vav Kei. But Moshe, v'chanosiyas asher rachon, v'richamtiyas asher rachem. Do you know what famous religious school of thought bases its entire mamash, foundation of this is based on the latter part of this book? Heard of John Calvin? Calvinism? Predeterminism? Don't you? Can you Google Calvinism? Just get some kind of mission statement. You've heard of John Calvin?
Protestant theological system of John Calvin and his successors, which develops Luther's doctrine of justification by faith alone and emphasizes the grace of God and the doctrine of predestination.
So the predestination means that if you are predestined for salvation, then you will have that salvation. But if you're not predestined for salvation, then all of the work in of exercising of your free will not help. So what does that mean? I should just be wicked? No, be as good as you can. And that'll show that you were predestined for good. Right? We're acting out a predetermined fate. It has its merits in trying to explain things that are very difficult for us to explain. I'm not here to discuss that. I'm here to tell you that it is. Does he quote this pasuk anywhere? You still have it on that statement. If you read further and you start to read in his writings, he says the foundation is this pasuk. You get it? V'chanosia, I will give chen and rachamim to the ones I shall choose. It may be random, it may not be random, but those are the ones. And I must tell you something I said at the beginning of this class. Just as the response to that. I'm not saying I'm much smarter philosophically than these predeterminists. I'm just saying that the rabbis understood this in a very different way. They said that only God knows who is the person who needs, who deserves rachamim and chayim. You know what I'm saying? Right? Although the Gemara, at least the way the Rambam explains it, seems to say that every tzaddik on Rosh Hashanah will live that year. Every Rasha on Rosh Hashanah will die that year. Really? And so I'll just leave you with this point, is that I teach a course and I teach a Ramaz now in 11th grade, and they were taught by a really, I knew her, I know her family, taught by a really wonderful, very special girl who went to Honduras to work in after there was a hurricane, a terrible flooding there. And she went down during her break at Columbia to Well, Barnard, I'm not sure which, but she went down during a break to work with some of the people there, and on the way back they were taking the bus to the airport, and you know the roads there are not wonderful. The bus slipped down a ravine and it turned over, and she was killed. So the students who were, she taught, my own daughter is actually teaching the same group this year. This girl taught them last year. And they were devastated. They really got very close with her, and her parents and her grandparents. And even though her great-grandparents, So they asked, was she set aside for death the previous Rosh Hashanah? When they said, Mi yichyeh umi yomus. Now, you know, the simple answer of our Makoros, our Gemaras, is anyone who dies is set aside for death, the previous Rosh Hashanah. Would you like to argue with that?
Yes.
Tell me why.
Because then it's my free will.
Then explain, what are we saying when we say Rosh Hashanah Yikosevun, Yom Tzom Kippur Yikosevun, Mi Yichyeh Umi Yomus? How could that be?
Because more than just that, some people are determined,
and
people are determined.
Okay, well, let's argue in the other way. Is it true that someone who is set aside Mi Yamus on Rosh Hashanah may not die that year?
No.
I don't know, in some thoughts, yes. You have till Yom Kippur, you have till Hanukkah, you have till, what, till Tu B'Shvat. I mean, no, you can't believe how, and then you have the whole year, given certain circumstances. I mean, no, anyone who's written for Mavis, of course they can do a great tshuva, right? Even when Yirmiyahu predicted a 70-year gullus, he said, and someone else predicted a 2-year gullus in chapter 28 of Yirmiyahu, right? He said, if we return after 2 years, that's not a proof that I'm a liar. It's a proof that you did an amazing tshuva, because God always can relent if you do something amazing. But I'll tell you when you'll know that he's a liar, is when 2 years pass and we don't return, because God doesn't go back on the good stuff. But here is where that needs to be refined. And I ask you based on the following. David HaMelech, at the age of, well, according to the Seder, only 28, or it doesn't matter. I think according to Ravanel, at the age of something like 12 or 13, was told that he is one day going to be the king of Israel. Right? In between, there's a lot of problems. The king of Israel wants to kill him, right? So David has this dilemma. My life is in great danger. Right, you know enough of Shmuel Aleph to know he had to be thrown out, cast out the window at night, and they're coming in to kill him in the morning, and something he takes a spear and he tries to throw it. So all through this, David may have actually felt the same way he told Shaul when he signed up for the job of Goliath slayer, that I felt that God was with me when he saved me from the lion and he saved me from the bear. You all know what I'm talking about, right? So David is a very, very faithful person. You see it coming out in the prokim that describe his early life in Tehillim. A man of tremendous faith, right? So, but you all agree that it would have been an egregious breach of faith, or a foolishness, for him to tell Shaul as Shaul was trying to kill him, or to tell Michal, who says, listen, I heard that my father wants to kill you. And he says, what do you mean your father wants to kill me? Let him make my day. God told me I'm going to be king one day. Right? So, and I trust that that's going to happen. So, let your father, you know, call up his forces. There's no way I'm going to get killed. Right? Your father can take a bow and arrow right at me right here and shoot it at me 5 feet away and the arrow will turn around. Because I'm supposed to be king. Now, I'm taking things to an extreme, obviously. Right? So yeah,
what's
of course, but so what is what? Of course, if David had acted so foolishly, nowhere in the whole story does he ever intimate that he intends to be king. He's always telling his father-in-law, "Why are you chasing after a dead dog, a dead fly? How many times do I have to show you that I don't want your kingdom?" Right? Just one time he slips up. One time when Shaul, after he's holding up his garment, right, he says, please promise me that when you become king, you won't kill my children. And David says, I promise. David should have said, how many times do I have to tell you I don't intend to become king? He slipped up there. That's why Shaul went back on it. So that in Shmuel Bet, when it says he saved Yonasan's kids, it doesn't say he saved them because of a promise he made to Shaul, but because of a promise he made to Yonasan. Shaul went back on that promise. Anyway, you get my. I'm giving you a big breakdown of the state of Shmuel here, but the point is that even though David has this great promise of becoming king, which I'm sure, based on Pesach Masor, I'm sure that he has great faith during that time that he'll get by this. But it doesn't stop him from strategizing and working through this. And, you know what I'm saying? So too, I said this. You know, I had to give it to the class this way. That this, there's no way someone as wonderful and perfect as this angel could be for death this year in the 20th year, right? But we still have free will to make. To make certain decisions, some that are fraught with danger, right?
Take the story of Acher, the guy he wanted a ladder and it's a
bad ladder. Right? That kid was not written off for death that year. Just check your ladder, right? Look, let's see how this manifests itself here, because this is really quite just a few months ago. We have a lot of how. You will not be able to see my face, Moshe, even you, because no human being can see my face and live. The Gemara explains in the Sifrei at the end of the Torah explains that you will see me after you die. Why can't a living man see God, but a dead man can?
Dead man can't die.
Right. But just as I say, let's use it in a rationalistic or scientific explanation, is that the human process of understanding what seeing God's face might entail would impede the other processes the brain needs to do to get everything else working here. It's about 2 or 3% of the brain. We're using another maybe 5, 6, 7% to think. It's a little more of the brain that we're using. We use about 10, 12% of the brain, right, in its capacities, right? But however much you're thinking now, you're using your brain to think and comprehend this and write at the same time and maybe feel how much your toe hurts you or have some other thoughts about a date you're having tonight or something, other things that your brain is able to do hundreds of thousands of things at the same time. But some of the things that are necessary as a command station to keep you alive will be so overtaxed if you see God's face that you will die. You'll simply die. The brain doesn't have to do those things when you're already dead. The brain being the neshama, right? The command station will, if it's so overtaxed, it'll kill you. In other words, Moshe, if you see my face, you cannot continue to live. You get it? Your brain won't be able to do the things it needs to continue to live. So, v'emar Hashem hinema kom iti v'nitzavta al hatzur. So I'll tell you, Have you ever taken an elementary philosophy class? You ever hear the five stages of epistemology of how we come to know things in Plato's Republic? You know, with a man sitting in a cave. You know what I'm talking about? And he's in his back is to the entrance of the cave, and they open up, and his eyes have gotten used to total darkness. He has no way. There's nothing he could see. He's mamish blind. Now, if he, from that state, walks right out and looks at the sun, he will go blind. In seconds. Right? What he has to do is, in five stages, he has to come to be able to look at the sun. First, keep looking at, with your back to the opening, where you'll open up a little piece of the cave, and light will shine in, and you'll see the light against the back of the cave. One. Then two, turn around and see the light coming in there. Right? Three, walk to the entrance of the cave and look at the ground. Four, look across. And five, then you can look up. What's fascinating is, I'm not sure if Rabbeinu Bechayai read Plato's Republic, but he says that's exactly what Moshe did at the sneh. First he saw a common sight. a bramble on fire. Then he saw that it was quite uncommon, because usually brambles on fire just disappear in the desert in 30 seconds or less. This one keeps burning, and it's not burning up. And say, I have to understand the words, because he says, Vineas nebo air, and then the next pasuk he says, Madua lo yiv ar hasne. You get it? The Torah is using the same word for two different things. What do you mean? It's of course it's burning. No, but it's not burning up. Following? Then look carefully. If you look in the Pesukim, it says he saw a Malach Hashem looking out at him from the snare. It says Malach Hashem. Then it's Elohim speaking to him, and then Yud Kevavke. You see how Hashem is slowly, that's what Ibn Ezra taught. Remember, Ibn Ezra said Elohim represents some kind of angel. Right? So it's a common sight, an uncommon sight, Malach, Elohim, Yud Kevavke. Also, five stages where Moshe came to look at the sun. Of course, he wasn't looking at God's face. That's why he turned away from it. It was too much for him to see too quickly. Right? So Hashem tells Moshe here, I'm going to take you into a place, Nitzavta al Hatzur. V'hayaba avor kvodi v'samticha b'nikras Hatzur v'sakosi kapi olecha adavri. Very, very anthropomorphic here. Familiar with anyone else in history that seems to have a similar experience? It's the Haftorah of this parasha, if it's not one of the special four weeks. Did you ring a bell? Look in the, if you have a Mekoros Gedolos, you should say it there. Same person, Hashem takes him into a cave, and he shows him a tiny little pinprick in the cave that leaves in the light that is Eliyahu HaNavi, who also goes 40 days and 40 nights without eating, so the connections are quite clear. Right? And there also Eliyahu wants to know from God, why do you allow that? How do you make this happen? You give them all the wealth, right? How is Achav the most successful king of our history? Because people in the world, God, you must know this. Jew and Gentile view their success as a sure sign that indicates the satisfaction of the God they worship. Right? So Shem says, you're right. Okay, let them succeed just so much. And it's a big chil Hashem what I'm about to allow the Arameans and the Assyrians to do to them. Right? But a bigger chil Hashem is that they succeed and yet they mistreat orphans and widows. That I can't allow. Because then that looks like that's what I want. I can't allow. I'll never allow that. It's the biggest chil Hashem. Bigger than the Assyrian king saying, we've destroyed the God of Israel. I'm a big boy. I can handle that. Those gods aren't alive anyway. I know that my competition is not in the other gods. My competition is what is my reputation because of what my worshippers are doing. Right? We're called Bnei Bechori Yisrael because a Bechor makes his parents to be parents. You are my reputation, Bnei Yisrael. So Hashem says, "V'hasirosi es kapi v'ro'iso es achoroi ufanai lo yero." So to answer my question, what does it mean to see God's back? Is why we're going to skip to Eov at this point. We are going to turn, and this for this you must bring your chaveret, because your chaveret has a whole review of all the prakim of Eov. See it? Okay. And this is where I'm giving you your assignment for the midterm. On Tuesday, each one of you, it's convenient that there are three of you, is going to be one of Eov's friends. Okay? Each one of you is going to be one of Eov's friends. Right? I have given you a review of every one of their arguments. Perek by perek. See it? Okay? Got it? Each one of you is going to play one of the friends and make the arguments, the philosophical arguments, about God's relationship to people. and I will be Eov in between. Then there's a fourth friend, just in case someone else joins us. There's a fourth friend who comes at the end, and we'll see how three of you will connect to him. All right. So for the midterm, you're going to hand in an essay. We'll decide how long. An essay promulgating that character's positions, but more important, the other Leviim of Tanakh will also discuss good and evil from that standpoint, right? And how their arguments hold up philosophically. Okay, all right. So that's basically where we're going to turn from here. And seeing God's back is to see things in retrospect. We're going to turn to that Mitzvah Shem on Tuesday to finally answer that question as a segue into Eov that we'll do Mitzvah Shem.